It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
All right, guys, how exciting is it that Wrigley will host the 2027 MLB All-Star Game? According to our baseball insider, Bruce Levine, it's been since 1990. That's a big gap. Why? And what's the best part?
Well, the best part is they got a bunch of All-Stars, I think. That's the good news. I just wonder, is that the return of Kyle Tucker, or will he be on the team for that?
Just
curious.
That's in a couple years. What will his career bring?
Right.
And would he get booed or cheered? And would he be coming back a champion or a chump?
Oh, boy. Holy cow. Yeah, I didn't see the champion or chump part of it coming.
You brought it up.
I did bring it up. It's a really good question because they've been trying to get it. 1990, that is a huge gap. I don't quite understand why it's been that long. Normally, if you're trying to get it, you get it, right? And that's a long gap. Does anyone have insight as to 35
safety.
Years?
Safety.
Is it safety concerns?
Yes.
Anything else?
And the stadium wasn't up
maybe to, over the last 10 years.
Stadium wasn't up to par.
Okay. Stadium
visiting,
falling apart.
Visiting clubhouse. You know, Ozzy, we talked to Ozzy about that.
Oh, that's
a
true.
Week ago. Gosh, okay. That was only a week ago.
They needed all the upgrades.
Yep. The visiting clubhouse was not even close to being ready for All-Star Game type festivities.
Man. Well, I think the best part is that they're ready for it. The building's looking good. They're throwing 30. Is that what Bruce said? There'd be 30 million in security added. And, you know, honestly, I think the fact that they will have representatives in that game is probably the most encouraging part of it.
Will PCA be involved in the Home Run Derby? Right. That would be interesting because do you know who the three All-Stars were in 90? Cubs had three All-Stars.
Sandberg.
Correct.
Dawson.
Correct.
Lee Smith?
No. I went Rick Sutcliffe when originally asked last night on the Fly the W podcast. Sean Dunstan was the third Cubs representative. Ryne Sandberg won the Home Run Derby that year. Guess how many home runs he hit?
Seven.
17.
That's a really good guess, Mully. Three. The wind was blowing in. And this is like Fielder, Canseco. These are like some of the all-timers. I think that group, like a bunch of guys were blanked. I think Mark McGwire hit one. Canseco didn't hit one. Cecil Fielder didn't hit one. The wind pivoted, was blowing straight in. I'm sure Bruce was there. It's pretty exciting. It's always exciting when the stars come to your town. You can show off a little bit.
You can't mess with nature, because if you do mess with nature, that's part of nature too.
Okay. So it's about security. That's the big gap. And the best part will probably be the Home Run Derby. And I predict that PCA will be part of that contest.
What's happened is lately, now it's become, this has gone on for many years through several different mayors, from Rahm Emanuel to Lori Lightfoot to now Mayor Brandon Johnson. And on Thursday, I believe there was an Alderman Bennett Lawson who introduced to the city council an ordinance that would initiate the anti-terrorism rated removal bollards. So there's a lot going on in terms of how to protect or how to get Wrigley Field ready to host such an event. And it's because of the lack of security or the negotiations between what you would need to do to basically shut down the neighborhood because of all of the close proximity to the bars and the restaurants. So it's been a hassle. It's taken a long time. It's gotten political. But this looks like the things have been cleared now that they can host the All-Star Game. Bruce has been on this for a while. I know we talked to Crane Kenny at the Cub Convention back in January, and this was the goal and expectation. Bruce has had this for a couple of years now. We'll look forward to talking to him about just the evolution of the story itself. But this is good news. And I do think it's fun to consider how many Cubs will be, how many White Sox could be. 2027, so this is what, could Noah Schultz be starting for the American League? You look at who else is going to, is Braden Montgomery going to be a starting outfielder for the American League? You don't know because it's a couple years away.
George Wokola.
George Wokola. That would be great. You know, local kid starring at Wrigley Field.
He'll win the home run contest.
He could, definitely. It's fun to consider. It's about time. And you know what the real benefit of it is? Maybe this means they will renovate the press box.
Picked off at a pick
Man
six.
Can dream.
As we approach Memorial Day weekend, a traditional baseball season mile marker, would you like to adjust your preseason Cubs prediction or projection? And what or who has been biggest surprise or the biggest disappointment?
Well, I think that I don't want to adjust my prediction because I don't want to come off as being like, oh, they're headed the big places now.
You had them at 103, right?
No, I didn't. I had him at 89. Sometimes it may sound like I had him at 103. I deserve that. I think I had him at 89, and I'm not want to get over my skis. I'm going to be very level-headed in this, and I think that makes it seem right. I am a little surprised that losing the two pitchers are still 10 games over 500. PCA, to me, has been the biggest surprise, only that how good he has been, how great he has been. And so I could easily say the catchers and that combined performance, but I don't know that that is as sustainable as what I think PCA is capable of accomplishing this season. The disappointment, well, besides the injuries to starting pitching, I have to say I had high expectations for Matt Shaw, and the last three games have been what I expected all season long, but him getting out of the gate slowly, going back to Iowa, was somewhat of a disappointment. But the Cubs are headed in the right direction as we hit the mile marker at Memorial Day weekend.
I feel good that they'll win the division. I feel good about that. I feel good that they're going to win 90 games because they put the toughest part, at least on paper, of their schedule in the rearview mirror and did a lot of that without their number one pitcher and their number two pitcher. Hopefully the number one or two, whichever way you look at it, however you slot Shota Imanaga, he will be back at least probably mid-June, maybe 2 more weeks, 3 weeks. We'll see him back with the Cubs. So, you know, the biggest surprise, Colin Ray, 3-0.
That's a good one.
You know, striking people out. And that's like and that one's a tip of the cap probably to Craig Counsell, who probably had to, wouldn't say talk Jed and Carter into doing it, but definitely probably, you know, went on the top rope and said, this is a guy I'd like you to bring in, and he's versatile. Like, if he, you know, if Ben Brown doesn't get moved to the bullpen, you know, Colin Ray has said, like, I came in here being open to the idea of being a starter if needed and being a bullpen guy if needed. And that's the kind of guy you want around, somebody who's versatile and is willing to do that. The back end of the bullpen is the biggest disappointment for the Cubs. There's no doubt about that. But I still, you know, they're going to win 90 games-ish, and they'll win the division. If not, it'll be a disaster.
You know, I honest to God, I think that I think 90 or bust was kind of the way I looked at this season, because they need to win 90 games to ensure they make the playoffs, and if they don't make the playoffs, I think Jed Hoyer's in trouble, so I just figured 90 or bust. To me, the biggest surprise has been the play of the catcher position. I don't want to just limit it to Amaya. I thought he was one of the guys that was sort of, is he going to take a step? What do you make of him? But between the two catchers, that has been one of the real strengths of this team. And that, I would say, is a surprise to me. I thought that, I thought that PCA was going to have a big year. I really did. I thought he played really well. And, you know, I thought he was like a real energy guy, would feed off the crowd kind of thing. So that doesn't stun me. He's a little better than I thought he'd be. I knew Kyle Tucker was going to have a great year because he always does. And he's going into a contract year. So I'm not really surprised by a ton. I would say I'm surprised that they haven't solidified the closer. I'm surprised that they've done as well as they have throughout the pitching staff, despite losing the two guys. And really, the catcher position was the one I didn't see coming.
This time he pays the price. Deron Bland, pick six.
Prediction time. The White Sox host the Rangers this weekend, and their season seems to be lost before Memorial Day. With Sox, will the Sox win a game in this series? Are you predicting a sweep for the Rangers?
Wow, that's just... We know who wrote that one.
I did not write that one.
Oh, don't start.
I did not.
Dustin.
Did he write it? I do not write any questions
for
the pick six.
Out him.
It was me. I did it.
All right.
Yeah.
Sean Sears answers the chat.
All right. Thanks, Sean. I would say that now that the White Sox are getting some players back, I still think they'll get swept.
Wow. And I'm the tisk guy.
Okay, just that was quick. I mean, was the season over before it even started? I mean, over from the standpoint of were they going to compete for the division? No, but I think, you know, we joked around a little bit, but I think they're better. There's better thinking. They're more professional this year over at 35th and Shields. There seems to be a plan. Now, it's going to take a while. There's not a whole lot of talent. I don't know about the Tim Elko getting demoted. I roster construction, I get it. Like, you know, you're paying Andrew Benintendi all that money. If he's ready, you got to bring him back up. He's not going to hang out in the minor leagues, right? The Palatine Pounder's not going to hang out in the minor leagues if he's coming back this weekend as well. I think the Sox will win a game this weekend.
Yeah, I think
right?
so.
I don't think they get swept. It's hard to get swept at home. I'm looking at the pitching matchups. Shane Smith's not going.
They'll win the Cannon.
The Cannon's going Saturday.
I think they'll win
maybe
the Cannon.
Maybe that's the and you know from a betting standpoint.
Good fodder, though. Cannon
from a
fodder.
Betting standpoint, I mean the Rangers are only minus 185, which for a Sox game, you know, they've been as high as minus 470 against them. I mean, so minus 185, there's a little bit of faith in the Sox.
So what's the purpose of this season? That's what you have to ask yourself, I think, every weekend, every series. The purpose is development, right? Develop players. What is it?
I don't know that there is a purpose this season. I think it's to wait until other players arrive.
Perhaps.
Are they developed? Vargas, I suppose.
There are players that are here. Vargas, Mydroth, maybe some of the bullpen pitcher, Jonathan Cannon, developing. You have to have a purpose to a season. It certainly isn't to win 70 games or to compete for a wild card spot. My point being that if the purpose of the season is in part development. I don't know why they're sending Tim Elko down after 31 at bats. He's got three home runs and 31 at bats, and yes, he's hit 162, but it's not really consistent with what their mission should be.
How many homers does Vonnie have? Just out of curiosity.
I'm not sure. I'll have to
and
check that out.
How many at bats? I'm just saying.
Tim Elko's homering once every 11 at bats.
But Tim Elko might run into one.
Yes.
And that's a
run. That's my point.
Yes.
Is that regardless of how you want to label it or if you're offended by the fact that this season is about development, you have a prospect in a guy in Tim Elko that I don't get how this, just because you're bringing back Benintendi, you're bringing back Mike Tauchman, there are enough at bats for guys who might be here for a little while. And I don't know if Tim Elko, he has been maybe overmatched at times, but doesn't really matter. Give him some time.
The purpose can't be to develop Benintendi, Mike Tauchman, and Andrew Vaughn.
No, so that's you're agreeing with me here.
Yeah,
when you place development and you make it a priority, you shouldn't be making decisions like sending Tim Elko back to the minors to get at bats that really don't help him adjust to major league pitching in the way that he needs to adjust to major league pitching. I think they win Saturday.
Pick six.
What is your reaction to Jeff Blashill being hired as the new Blackhawks coach, replacing interim Andre Sorensen, who was hired to replace Luke Richardson? All coaches are hired to be fired, but that seems especially true in the modern NHL, where guys are being turned over quite regularly. Would it be cruel to ask if you believe Blashill is a point A to B guy or a long-term fix Would you be more excited if it had been David
Carl? David Carl would have excited the fan base and certainly was plan A for the Blackhawks, and they can't get around that. And I don't know if they will choose to deny that Tuesday when they address these questions and introduce Jeff Blashill. It's not Jeff Blashill's fault that David Carl was the object of a lot of teams and the target for a lot of teams in this offseason coaching cycle. Jeff Blashill is a professional NHL head coach. He has experience with the Red Wings. It wasn't all a great experience, but he did have experience behind the glass developing players like Dylan Larkin, being in charge of guys. They weren't very good necessarily when he was there. He did get to the playoffs his first season. He was Mike Babcock's replacement. That stain, I think, has worn off because you have to evolve as an NHL head coach, and you can't be as much of a dictatorial force as Babcock was. I think Jeff Blashill will be more like John Cooper, who he has worked for the last couple seasons in Tampa as an assistant coach, than he will be Mike Babcock. I think this would be a move that would be hard to galvanize the fan base that needs galvanized, but I do think that they could have done worse. That's not a rousing endorsement, but I do think I want to keep an open mind and give them a chance.
They could have done worse. Wow. I'll go with the fact that he's been around John Cooper for a little bit, and maybe he's got a little bit of that Tampa Lightning John Cooper stink on him. Right? I mean, nobody likes the Red Wings if you're a Blackhawks fan, so that you don't want any of those kind of connections. And he was part of that rebuild up there, and it didn't go very well. I mean, he was 204, 261, and 72. I mean, I don't think this makes anybody sign up for Blackhawks season tickets. That's for sure. The guy from Denver, and the guy from Denver worked with some younger players, had some international, you know, Team USA connections as well. But he decided to stay in college. It wasn't like the Blackhawks lost out on him and he decided to go to another organization. But let's hear what Blashill has to say. Let's give him a few minutes. And more importantly, you know, let's hear how the general manager, who I think, you know, is pretty good at telling us the plan. And on Tuesday, let's keep an open mind. Let's hear what he says, and let's ride it out. We were lucky enough to have one of these guys in studio.
Luke Richardson.
He was fantastic. He was really good. But he didn't have a lot to work with. Where did he land?
Anywhere? Luke Richardson, I have not seen where he's landed yet. He's not as a head coach.
Jeff Blashill is 51 years old. He's a grown man. I read a story in The Athletic a few days ago about him. They talked to the writer that covered him in Detroit, and the guy said that one of the problems he had was that he kind of acquiesced to some of the veteran guys. Well, there's no danger of worrying about that here. Mm-hmm. They don't really have a lot of aged veterans that are going to have much say in what they're doing. In fact, the youth movement, I mean, goodness gracious, they have been drafting eight guys in the first round, five guys in the second round, eight guys in the third round. They got the number three pick in the draft this year. These players are going to be coming fast and furious. So you got a grown man who, and listen, with all due respect to his time in Detroit, and I know the great Elliot Friedman has taught us that second time around, coaches are better. Your second job, you are better than you are as your first one, especially in the NHL. So that's good news. But Dustin's on it. It's the proximity to John Cooper that is the allure here. It's the fact that he was working for one of the best coaches in the league. John Cooper, by the way, came up from the AHL. He had already won a lot of stuff, just not
great
at this
story.
Level. And then he won everything here.
Former lawyer.
So he's an exception to the rule. But
yeah.
if this guy is good enough for him, then he's good enough for the fine folks in Chicago.
By the way, Luke Richardson linked to the vacant Bruins job, the first time his name has surfaced in many months.
A crushing pick six.
The Blackhawks have made eight selections in the first round of the draft over the previous three seasons, along with five in the second round and another eight in the third. More youngsters on the way this year, including their third overall pick. What makes you believe Jeff Blashill is the man to lead them? Most importantly, is he the man to get the best out of Connor Bedard?
Well, that is the number one question. That is it, right there. That's all he's really got to do is figure out how to get the most out of Bedard. And we're going to talk to Frank Saravelli a little bit later. Love talking to him. He told us one of the keys with Bedard's development is getting him to get a little more selfish. Hey, take more shots. You got like one of the best shots in the league. Take advantage of that. Score more goals. Don't worry about setting people up. I think Connor Bedard's a good kid, and I think that he wants to play a team game. No, take over a little bit. So hopefully we get some of that. You know, the Blackhawks have a very fast team, as we heard Bedard tell us. And they're presumably going to just keep getting faster as they bring up these young guys. They don't got a lot of, there's not a lot of beef on the bones of all these young players. So, you know, it's going to be really important to develop these guys physically and work them hard. And, you know, by all accounts, a guy like Jeff Blashill is not going to ignore the defensive end to get more scoring. He's going to be demanding, and that's good. So I think this might be a sneaky good hire, especially if he can do some things with Bedard. That's the whole job in a nutshell.
It's all about Connor Bedard. Anytime we're talking about the Blackhawks, it's about Connor Bedard. And this gives the general manager, he's in, you know, trusting Jeff Blashill to make his picks, you know, produce at the NHL level.
Yeah.
I think that's also what the second, you know, if number one, and I think it's number one without a doubt, is Connor Bedard. How does Blashill get Connor Bedard and these other draft picks by the general manager to mesh and lead the Blackhawks, you know, at least forward?
Okay, everything is about Bedard. So here's your Blackhawk offseason summer checklist. And summer begins Monday, by the way, as we discussed. So they have to essentially introduce Jeff Blashill on Tuesday. He needs to make a good, strong first impression. Then the NHL draft comes around. Draft Michael Mesa with the third overall pick, a guy who can a forward who can help Connor Bedard be the player that he is, whether he's setting him up and letting him take all the shots, because he can take all the shots. You draft somebody who's an impact player at number three. Then, as July 1st creeps up, that is the first day that Connor Bedard can sign a contract extension in Chicago. Otherwise, he's facing the final year before he's a restricted free agent. That can't happen. That cannot happen. Connor Bedard said he loves it here. His last exit interview said he wants to stay here, and the Hawks have to let him prove that by making him an offer that he cannot refuse. So July 1st, he can sign a contract extension for the first time, make it happen. Then whatever money you have remaining, and you should have a lot of money remaining because the Hawks haven't spent any money, really. They have modest free agents, but they have a lot left. Go after Mitch Marner. He is an unrestricted free agent in Toronto. The Leafs just fell apart again, on brand, on schedule. They aren't going to do anything in Toronto with that core. Break it up, Leafs. Mitch Marner, come to Chicago, be the compliment to Bedard. That is your perfect offseason to give Jeff Blashill a chance to get the most out of Connor Bedard. Kyle Davidson can make it all happen.
And that was very close to being a pick six the other direction.
That's the voice of Ross Tucker. He's going to talk tush push with us at 7:25 amongst other NFL topics. The college football playoff will move to a straight seeding model next season, rewarding the selection committee's top four teams with the top four seeds and first round bye. Is this progress or a system better left alone? Who benefits potentially and who does it hurt?
Answer the first part first, because it is progress. And it won't leave us with the silly situation last year where we had teams getting a bye that did not deserve it. Talking to you, Boise State, SMU, didn't they get byes? You look at the way that things were seeded because of the way the guys snuck into the playoff. And so this is definitely a reward for seasons that are better than others. Now, are we going to call this the Notre Dame rule or not, Dustin? Because let's face it, this is who benefits the most potentially. Notre Dame, if they're fourth, they'll get the fourth seed. They won't be forced to play a game unlike other teams who win a conference championship. So this is the Notre Dame rule. This is the Notre Dame, as Dustin ponders this.
I'm not quite so sure.
Okay, he's not so sure about that. But you know what? If Notre Dame, they're going to make a rule for Notre Dame, I would like them to have a quarterback situation that was a little more stable. If they're going to be back in the playoff, how are they going to get there? Tell me that, because I don't know about their quarterback situation. This is the first time they've had a unsettled quarterback situation in some time, and now they've got they greased the skids. This is for them. This is for Notre Dame.
I think they want Notre Dame to host a home game, which is exactly what they would have done either way. If you look around in the many different websites, the team that it would have helped out last year the most would have been Oregon. That's who it would have helped out the most, because they would have had the bye, and then they would have had a lower seeded team. Boise would have played Indiana. So instead of getting a SEC team maybe right off the bat, you would not have gotten that. I think it helps the power conferences. That's who it helps, because instead of having two teams in the top four, you potentially could have three or two or even four teams in the top four. So Boise's not going to automatically get the top four, or the Big 12 is not going to automatically get the top four by winning the conference championship game, which this is what I find interesting, is what does that conference championship game mean now? It almost squat. It almost means absolutely nothing.
It almost do more damage.
Right. So, I mean, that's what's going to, will the sponsorship remain the same and things like that? So if it was reseeded, your top four under this parameter would have been Oregon number one, Georgia number two, Texas number three, and Penn State number four. So ASU and Boise, would not have had those byes.
But Notre Dame does not have to necessarily worry about being on the outside looking in.
Right,
if they take
care of their business like they should. But I think in the big picture, I think Notre Dame probably wants that home game, and I think TV wants Notre Dame to play that home game in the opening weekend of this, if you will. But again, it's progress. It's something. It helps Oregon, who I think got a raw deal last year. Sorry, Maya.
No, you're totally correct. I'm just going to quickly say that I thought the college football playoff was a resounding success. Mm-hmm. I thought it was so good. It made the season that much better. It was fantastic. But we all knew what the problems were, and this is addressing that. Whether it's, again, the big conference teams are always going to – they've taken over college football. We all know that. But if they get seeded better or whatever, I don't care. I loved what happened last year. It was one of the most exciting years in college football in a very long time. And it's great that they're addressing it and trying to get it better still. So God bless them. I'm all for it. We all knew, hey, this is fantastic, but it's got to be better. Maybe this makes it better. If it doesn't, don't you feel like they'll address that too? I think they're doing a really good job with college football. It's in a very healthy place, given how dominant the conferences have become and kind of taken over the whole thing. It's still riveting stuff, and the season was so much better than in previous years. You couldn't help but feel a little bit of satisfaction that they made this great change to expand the playoffs. Just great stuff. Really, really appreciate it, and looking forward to next year. All right, we got the extra point next. Mullion Hall on the score.